I'm trying to figure out the headset right now.
This one's still warm from the last guy.
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
All right, so could you just quickly check speak in the microphone?
Yeah, I think I think we're hot.
No, seriously, we usually do a good job with this, but this is literally the first year where like we haven't like normally we're constantly dipping in and out of mics, but like calibration, wow. We've just been like everyone's perfectly calibrated all of a sudden. Hi, yo. So once again, this is Side Pocket. I am one of the content slaves. I mean, content. People for Radio Statler, and I'm really excited because when I saw we had so much content this year for Hope, and when I was looking down through the content, I was just holy crap with so many things. And one of the first targets I was like is like, oh, awesome, the guy who's torrenting drugs and he prank calls terrible people that try to oversell stuff is back again, which means he has something to say. I am kidnapping him for this for Radio Statler. So for all the people out there, if you don't mind, would you like to introduce yourself, sir?
Yeah, well, I think you did a great job already, but I'm honored to be kidnapped by you. And yes, I am the guy who...
That's a first.
Well, yes, I am the guy who torrents pharmaceutical drugs and does prank call people who value money over human life. My name is Michael Laufer, and I'm chief spokesman for the Four Thieves Vinegar Collective. And I came in today, and this morning I unveiled a bunch of our latest initiatives that the world hadn't seen yet, and it was really great to have such a supportive audience. I love coming to Hope. It's the best.
Awesome. And just before we get into the more nitty-gritty stuff, you had a particularly full room. Like, last time the room was full, but this time I was near the back area, and they had people lining up the hallways, and security had to constantly, like, disperse the masses because that's how much people really wanted this information.
Yeah, well, last time we were in the smaller room, but yes. they still filled up and closed the doors because we were violating fire code. So it's also nice to know that people are aware of what we're doing and are trying to follow it, and that more people will see what we're trying to do.
So you're torrenting drugs, you're trying to start fires. It's an overall bad boy.
You know, I mean, guys gotta have some fun.
So, on to actually more serious subjects. So, when I was here at the for your previous talk, it was actually quite impressive that what you, in my opinion, what you want to see is either a return or a renewal of like the democratization of medication for people who need it. Is that a decent description?
I mean, I shy away from the word democratization because
Fair enough. It
has a lot of baggage with it. I'd like to think of things as being, anarchized, perhaps.
Right? I like that. I like anarchy.
We'd like to get things to the point where there's sufficient equity across boundaries that everybody has access. Oftentimes, people look at a political struggle like this, and their goal is to invert the power structure. Let's take the people who don't have power, give them power, and let's take the people who have power and knock them down. And I think of it a little more, it's a little softer than that in my mind. The idea is that there doesn't have to be an enemy despite the fact that it's a war. What we're trying to do is say, everybody should have access. I mean, Heather Bresch, like, you know, I prank call her, but like, she's not the enemy.
Right.
She should have access to medications too.
Yeah.
And so the thing is if we're able to crack open science and medicine and medical technology to a point where it is so easily accessible that those factors don't count anymore, then that class distinction of, you have 8 years less predicted lifespan because you're poor goes away. And that's the way it should be.
Right, right. And just want to also clarify out there that this has a big impact on me because before my mother's own passing away, she was a lifetime type 1 diabetic. So I had to go through all the different stuff with the different insulin price ranges and availability. And
yeah, that's a really big deal right now.
Yes.
And there's a huge problem. And there are a lot of really skilled biohackers working on that. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult problem.
So tell me about what processes you and your organization are doing to help achieve this medicine for all who in need.
So we do a myriad of things, right? Mm-hmm. We're not married to a particular strategy.
Right, I just want some examples.
Right, sure. So the central point that we work toward is this automated chemical reactor that we call the Apothecary Microlab. Mm-hmm. And this is something that can be built for less than $100 with off-the-shelf parts and 3D printed parts. and allows somebody who's not trained or skilled in chemistry to be able to build the active pharmaceutical ingredient in a drug that they might need but not be able to afford or have access to due to legality or infrastructure. So that's our sort of central tenet. We got a big splash in the news about a year and a half ago when we took a shot at Mylan for the EpiPens.
Yes.
We developed an open source version that you could build yourself for about $30 and that you could reload for about $3, and that it was testable.
From what I understand, crazy enough, the violation wasn't the actual medication, the EpiPen, but it was actually the supported patent on the ejection system.
Right, yeah. and that was the weirdest part, right? Because people got in touch with us through the webpage and said, why aren't you guys doing something about the EpiPen? So we started doing the research looking at how you manufacture epinephrine, and we were like, wow, this is kind of tricky, but I mean, why would this be such a thing? And then it wasn't until we were a few days into the research where we were like, oh, you can just buy this for $1.
Yeah.
This isn't the barrier. The barrier is that they built an auto-injector that they're not sharing. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, there have to be other auto-injectors out there.
So interesting perspective from my end. So for 2 years, I used to actually work in a pharmacy.
Condolences.
And, yes, I know. Believe it or not, most of the experience was quite pleasant, shockingly enough. I had really good people. And the thing, and I was always 100% truthful at my job that I did. And
that seems reasonable.
Yes, and well, you have to. It's people's lives.
Yeah.
And so the thing I had to tell people all the time was, you really hate insurance companies and the people who make who manufacture the medicine. We really hate the insurance companies and doctors and the people who manufacture the medicine for all of our frustration is we get EpiPens and we would always have $4 at a time, and it would annoy us because basically every 2 months we'd have to throw them away because no one would buy them because of how inflated the prices were.
Yeah.
And a lot of my lead pharmacist had kids who needed EpiPens themselves, and he could barely even afford them.
Right.
And so it's just this whole ordeal where we're just like, we want to get this off the shelves and onto people, believe it or not. I mean, we're selling it, but we're not there. And like, if we had our way, EpiPens would be like at max like $50. Or something like that, and you would do like a return in or something,
right.
Like at least a starting thing. And so we're like, huh? Like,
yeah. It's so heartbreaking, especially, and I think things like Narcan and the EpiPen are such a microcosm because you see something that's such an effective technology that is so critical that brings the moral issue into the sharpest focus because you're talking about a period of 15 minutes where somebody's going to be dead if they don't get this. And this is something that's well-established technology. It's not that complicated. And there are zero ways that it can go wrong.
Yeah.
And so when you see a technology like that and people can't get it, it boggles the mind.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be in little boxes the same way defibrillators are everywhere.
I encounter this in tech all the time, and I feel the same way as that. We're in 2018 going on 2019. Why is everything like, would think with the tech progression that, because we've told tech progression improves people's lives, but, there's so many factors that's not the case most of the time.
Well, and that's the thing that I always talk about first in my talks. I say it says something very stark about humanity when we spend all of this time and energy developing this technology and then refuse to deliver it.
Mm.
And, when you talk about tech like that, I mean, like every tech person knows that there's so much technology that's just not on the shelf, despite the fact that it was developed. And, not to draw too much of a parable, but like oftentimes we think about technology in sort of a science fiction-y way.
Yeah.
Right? We decide that like, oh, it's going to either create this perfect utopia or it's going to destroy the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, we see that, again, in science fiction a lot, right? You read, Ursula Le Guin, or you read, Neal Stephenson.
Like Brave New World. And,
right,
yeah.
But what we really all should be reading is like old William Gibson, where like the technology shows up, but it doesn't really work.
Yeah.
Things kind of break, and things are just going to suck in slightly different ways the way they always have.
Or for more adapting in terms of biohacking, I feel like we're more like Jurassic Park, where you have that commodification.
But we're not even, right, but it's not even there. And like, and I referenced Jurassic Park in the talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was such a seminal film for all of us, right, when we saw it the first time.
Yeah.
And it made us think about science in a new way, and it made us think about ethical issues surrounding investigation. But again, that famous quote from Jeff Goldblum playing Ian Malcolm there when he says, life finds a way. Mm-hmm. Ironically, there's a logical gap there coming from this fictional mathematician, which is that, you know, we're life as well.
Yes.
And we're finding a way.
Yes.
And this is part of that ecosystem. So many times people detach the idea of human consciousness being something that's not part of nature.
Yes, exactly.
And sure, perhaps we've evolved beyond where we should have for the benefit of our ecosystem, but it's not like we're not real.
Yeah.
It's not like we were injected from some foreign place.
Right.
We're bad for the environment.
That's like chocolate milk is its own drink, but it's still made of chocolate and milk at its base thing at the end of the day. We actually have a cool question on Twitter. I kind of chuckle at this. I hope I pronounce this right. Mad Joe, hope I pronounce that right. Percent Mad Joe asks, where do you see the future of healthcare in the U.S. going? I know it's so loaded. I was just going to say.
I think that's an important question.
It is.
It's hard to say, but my optimistic view is that because access to healthcare and access to health technologies is becoming more and more repressed, that people will think a little more broadly about being invested in their own health and taking in trying things in the DIY realm and not outsourcing the responsibility of how you handle your health, because it's such a problem and it's a cultural problem.
Yeah.
Something's wrong, go to the doctor. The doctor tells you to do something or take something, you do that. It works or it doesn't. And then you repeat, you iterate that process until you get better or you die. Mm-hmm. That's really, really inefficient.
Yeah.
Right? And
sounds like InfoSec to some degree. Yeah.
Well, really bad InfoSec,
yes,
right?
Very bad.
And it's like, so the thing is that you can do that really hard stress testing and watch things crumble. Or instead, right, and it's the same thing culturally. We see that with automobiles, right? In America,
yes.
That's how you run your car. You drive your car until it doesn't work, and you take it to a mechanic and be like, make it work. If instead you have like a European race car approach to your health, where you're like, oh, I have 30 years on the clock. I should maybe check the oil. Oh, let's see. Do I have arterial plaque? Maybe I should get that looked at. I don't have any symptoms, but let's check before there are symptoms.
Right.
Oh, let's check my blood pressure and temperature and, you know, heart rate from time to time just to see if, you know, there's something wrong. And that, just that basic maintenance, if we could all do that, it would
go a long way.
It would orders of magnitude.
And you run into the same wall that I often do it at, both in when I was in healthcare and technology, where a good chunk of humans, unfortunately, to quote The Matrix earlier, don't care how something works as long as it works, meaning it's like it's not a problem until it ends up as a problem, when
right.
There could just be steps that they could take intermediately that would solve most potential outcomes in the future.
Well, I think in InfoSec, we saw this for decades with PGP.
Yeah.
Nobody used it.
Yeah.
Why? Because it was a pain.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
It was just that
it was
difficult.
I use GPG, and I agree with you, yes.
Right? I mean, it's like, yeah. And it's like, okay, cool. It takes like... if you're really struggling with technology, it could take you a whole day to set up.
Yeah.
And to implement, there's this, you know, extra step that it takes. And that barrier is similar to the barrier of saying, oh, wait, I could synthesize my own drug, but, like, isn't that hard?
Yeah.
And if we can all work to inspire the newbies to say, look, if you want to do this, we'll help.
Right.
If I know something and you don't, I will work with you until you get it.
And to me, that's part of the hacker ethic right
and it
there.
Is,
yes.
That is the central part of the hacker ethic.
Yep.
And that's what I love about the hacking community so much, is because the hackers figured this out decades ago.
Yep.
And the rest of the scientific community are still being elitist about it, and it makes me really angry.
I think that part of the reason for that is, once again, we have such a sociocultural hierarchy, especially symbolically. So a lot of times when you talk about healthcare, interesting also thing, so despite me not being the highest up on the ladder, I had a lab coat. And I've had people notice, they're like, hey, you go to this convention or you go to this thing, why do you still wear your lab coat? And I tell people, it's amazing how many people believe you and what they believe of you if you simply just wear a lab coat. We see, so when we think of healthcare, we think of ties and lab coats and that these are infallible, like gods, like in the Bible, and that's the only thing in the universe that controls that aspect that's very fundamental to human beings.
Sure, and I experienced that too. I mean, it's very weird. Like, I'm a professor of mathematics, but like, that doesn't mean I know anything about
health. Oh yeah, that's the thing. If you're a scientist,
and somehow people take me seriously. I mean, not that they shouldn't, yeah. per se, but they should decide whether they take me seriously based on whether I understand yeah. health technology, mm-hmm. not because I have letters
the
after
lack
my
of
name.
Encourage of critical thinking. Which, not that we lack critical thinking, we lack encouragement of it, in my
exactly.
opinion. Yes.
And that breaks my heart more mm-hmm. than anything in the world.
So just to rewind a bit, so you talked about how you're trying to essentially get a system going with automated devices to make medications if you have the base component. Could you go a bit detail of like some of those type of examples and
sure.
possibly the mechanisms of them?
Yeah, so this technology exists. It's one of the things that we do is we take a very engineering type approach to mm-hmm. things. We're not inventing anything.
Right.
We're looking for technologies that are on the shelf that have been built in difficult, expensive, proprietary ways and said, you know, can we make this for easy and cheap?
Yes.
And in most cases, the answer is yes. So automated chemical reactors usually only do about three things.
I just want to say, I just love that word because for some reason, I just think of like, it's like Chernobyl, but I want to visit like Disney World. I don't know why. I just love that word. I just want to get that out there. Please continue. I apologize.
So automated chemical reactors only do about three things. Mm-hmm. You can expand them to do more sophisticated things, but the central thing that they do is they stir, mm-hmm. they maintain temperature, mm-hmm. and they inject reagents at particular times.
Right.
Now, if you think about this from a hardware automation perspective, this is not
yes,
hard.
Yes, it's not okay at all.
At all. Mm-hmm. And so that's why the early versions that we did were so hacked together, and mm-hmm. and they still worked.
Yeah.
And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to build versions of that that have smoother, easier, slicker user interfaces, mm-hmm. have fewer parts, easier to mm-hmm. assemble, cheaper. We're just trying to do the calculus on everything mm-hmm. to optimize.
How cheap have you gotten these so far, theoretically?
Well, the goal has always been to come in under the $100 mark, mm. and we're still there by a fair margin.
Cool.
So, yeah.
That's interesting enough. Before I ask some other questions, I don't know if you'll get this Lurie reference, and if you don't, I can explain this. So would it be easy to say that you are trying to make the process of obtaining and manufacturing medication into the Diamond Age?
Roughly speaking.
And to quickly sure. explain to our home to the audience, there's a book by Neal Stephenson called The Diamond Age, where essentially there's a sort of it's advanced 3D printer. It's like a matter compiler.
Right.
It's a base carbon material, and so things have gotten so easy to manufacture that all the most items that you could think of come from this machine. So they're at like way less per. So a lot of people just have a lot of things. So like class is a completely different concept than what we would think about modern day now.
Yeah. So we certainly would like to engender that type of structure mm-hmm. in the medical world. It would be really nice if we got to a point where wealth was not a determining factor in your health. And that's a difficult barrier at this juncture. But we'd like to get to a point where wealth was no longer a determining factor in your health, where we could look at the demographics from CDC and say, oh yeah, rich people, they die the same
yeah.
as the rest of us. Currently, not the case.
Yeah. That is the whole point of the whole symbolism of dense macro barriers. No matter what area of life you come from, we all eventually end up dead.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
so it's all about the pursuit
yeah.
of the human well-being.
And that's the other thing, is that health's really eternal, right? When we look,
yeah.
you know, genocides come and go, as mm-hmm. horrific as they are, and, you know, administrations come and go, and wars come and go, mm-hmm. but no matter what, if there are still human beings, we still have to deal with human health before
yeah.
and after and during. Yep. And so that never goes away.
Humanity is the original symptom, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So before I ask this interesting IRC question, I want to do one last little bit of side experience on my end.
Yeah.
So one of the amazing things I found, the same way with the lab coat, is now I'm going to actually backtrack this to one of my favorite things that you did at your first talk. In fact, I have a minor question about this talk compared
okay.
to that.
Okay.
I think one of the best moments during the talk, and you can really feel the aha moment in the crowd, was when, I sadly can't remember which chemical it was, but that you took a gel caplet and you scooped up the powder of the drug and put it together done. And so one of my experiences in pharmacy is that we're not saying that chemistry is, especially at that level, is not complicated, but people kind of like computers think that their medication is way more complicatedly manufactured than they think for a mass majority of it.
Yeah.
And I have to, like, the most that we ever do in pharmacy is we have a little machine that you put the one base chemical in and it pours water and stirs in. That's the most amount of chemical mixtures that we really do.
Right, you're doing percent
yeah.
solutions.
And so the funny, quick aside thing from that is that If you look at almost every pharmacy, at least in the United States, they have, I'm going to screw up this term because it's been
mortar
a long day.
Pestle.
Yeah, mortar and pestles in the background and giant, like, old school beakers.
Sure, yeah.
And
they never use them.
And the funny part is, so the reason why all of them have them is because a pharmacy is technically a lab. In order to qualify legally in the United States as a lab, they had them. So we used to have a running joke in our pharmacy company that I started, which is that you can please either convince, like tech company, please convince the United States law that to like scrap this because it's kind of redundant, or we have them, but on our breaks, we make tea with them. We take them and grind them up and use filtering and
I'd like to see a little more ridiculous. Because the thing is if you know well, if you go into pharmacy, you have to have a tremendous amount of training.
Yes.
And 95% of that training you never use.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is that in most, in many Western European countries, when you go to a pharmacy, they actually utilize that knowledge and can actually look at you and say, oh, you don't have to go to a doctor. I know what you've got. Let me give you a shot and you'll be fine in a couple of days. We should have that.
Yes.
We should be able to get things, as long as things are stratified, we should stratify them in an optimized way so that you can get healthy more quickly. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I can do that in Greece but can't do that in the United States is ridiculous.
I know. We have so long to go. So IRC question that's interesting. It's from Giles. Said, I'm going to read the whole thing. From your site, by the way, what is that?
It's fourthievesvinegar.org.
Neat.
You should be able to find us without too much searching.
He wrote, this person, I should say. From your site, it seems like you haven't been too communicative since 2017. I'll have updates, any reasons, hurdles getting media coverage, ideas for broadening your reach. Is that an issue? Or?
It's basically an artifact of our lack of numbers. We have a number of people there, but everybody, we're an anarchist collective, right?
Yeah.
Everybody has a day job, everybody has real life. Mm-hmm. They can only devote so much time, and so despite the fact that we keep developing things, trying to package it in a way that can be taken and then updating it it's a bit of a trick. Whoever that is on IRC, I'm sorry. We're trying to do better, and we're hoping to release more. We do. If you do sign up on our website for the mailing list, we send out updates occasionally. And if you sign up to be a beta tester, we give you more detailed updates. So those are all available. And if you're looking for something in particular, you can also contact us through the website. And despite the fact that we get hundreds of emails a day, we will try our best, I promise, to get to you. If it takes a while, bear with us.
So you said beta tester. How do you sign up for them? What does that entail?
So we're trying to push to get things to a very stable beta state. Mm. We want to be able to have essentially an instruction package that says, here are the things that you need to get. Here's the cheapest place to get them. Here's how you assemble them. Here's the code that you put in. Here's the precursors that you put in. And here's what you get out. Tell us how it works. You know, tell us if it works for you as easily as it works for us. And so we're getting much, much closer to a point where we're going to be able to do a steady beta release. And we have, you know, a bunch of beta testers who hopefully will try building it and come back and say, oh, here are some things that were a little tricky. This part is flimsy. You know, this wasn't clear. And then we'll be able to do like a full beta release that's for everybody. And then hopefully, as an organization, we can cease to exist because the open source movement will just take over, and it'll be another tool that people will use in ways that we didn't think of.
Well, let's hope for that. And part of that, by the way, in terms of taking the torch, is that a lot of people think that, oh, I got prize randomly. Oh, yes, Plague Doctors.
Yeah. If you want some stickers.
Thing. Awesome. Thank you. I run a DEF CON group out in New Jersey.
Oh, nice.
So any stickers that you have, they go real fast, but I will treasure these two that I got here. Thank you for that.
Oh, I have more upstairs. Let me know.
Just a couple more quick questions before we bring friend in. What was I going to do? So one of the things I saw near the end of your talk was apparently one of the things you're working on is essentially doing like some sort of torrenting like GitHub for the either automated device or the setup to try to make your own drugs. Could you detail a bit about that?
So the distributed network is actually a cell network. It's biologics. Mm. So the interesting thing is right, you can show people how to make their own medicines.
Right.
And you can distribute that information, but the medicine itself doesn't self-replicate.
Right.
However, if the medicine is biologic, it will self-replicate. And so we're looking at medications that are based in the biological world where if you have something, you can make as much of it as you want, you can send it away, and everybody you give it to can make as much of it as they want. Sourdough starter, kombucha, seeds. It's not a new idea.
Right. It's just I've never seen it being applied to this field before.
Yeah, it's not enough. And so the one that we're really excited about that hopefully we'll be passing out tomorrow or the next day is the thing that makes it so you never have to have a cavity ever again.
Ooh. That'd be neat considering the amount that I unfortunately have. Although it took me a while. It was until I was 15.
But yeah, there's probably a reason for that. It's subtle biologically, and I know you need to move on. But yeah. There's a way that you can take one treatment and never have a cavity again for the rest of your life.
Wow, I am
and
very
hopefully I
that,
will
yeah.
have that later.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing for I was, because I heard about that, but I was glad to get some from the audience that, technically hepatitis C is curable.
It's entirely
if you
curable.
Get it.
Yep.
It's just so freaking expensive.
Yep.
What was the figures you said on that? We should do the calculations.
You have to take one pill a day for 12 weeks, and each pill is $1,000. So it's $84,000.
It's going to be a lot of crypto mining.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Move to Iceland where it's cold and you can cool down your CPUs.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So just quickly racking my brain for it because we have time for like one or two more questions.
Do you have any others coming in off the net?
Yeah, actually, believe it or not, most people are just reacting to the numbers that you put in. Literally, someone wrote 1,000 USDs for one pill. Wow. Like all lowercase.
Yeah.
Like,
no, and the thing that's really strange is that there's zero recourse for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely no law regulating price caps for drugs. If you control something, you decide how much it costs, and there's nobody you can say anything about. You can protest, nobody cares.
If you want to see how crazy it gets, just look into what's known as the supplement market. That alone, yeah. Alex Jones says hi. So I would say, yes, quick thing is that where do you... let's put it...
Tell him if he wants to chat, I'm game.
Awesome. What do you, after this, of what you've shown and a couple of things, and they'll be able to see in the talk where you showed open PCB board, I'm going to do a lot of the automation process, making this stuff simpler, trying to say, what at this stage do you think is the immediate tactile next step for your organization to do?
We need to sort of stress test what we have. We want to, some of the things are a little over-engineered right now, and we want to dial them back so that they're a little simpler. Again, trying to make things more accessible, greater margins of error, and cheaper. But we're most of the way there, and I'm excited because there's more to come. And we're going to be at DEF CON, so for those of you who frequent DEF CON, come see us. We'll have more to show you.
Ooh, that's kind of a preview here. But I'm hoping that our listeners, as well as people at the con, because it seemed like you really riled up the crowd here. Like, I'm really excited to hope that, despite not many of us being from a medical background, medical field, like I said, we're all getting older. We all have health problems.
Sure.
We are now all having kids. We're also getting health problems. So I really hope that because of how potent the hacker spirit is, that we are going to be able to take this torch that you've made and just keep passing it and passing it until someone can fling it over the roof of Monstano, and then they can burn that to the ground.
I hope that too.
Yes.
I genuinely, genuinely hope that. For now, if people want to help out and join us, welcome them.
But to ask how can they contact you, websites that they can go to try to help us?
There's a contact form in the website. Go ahead, get in touch, tell us what you do.
That website again is?
It's fourthievesvinegar.org, and it's written out. In words, so feel free to get in touch if you want to do it. And again, like you say, hopefully it'll get to the point where we'll just kind of be a footnote because everybody will be doing it.
That's the idea, is the race to normalcy.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you for being on this program. I hope you enjoy the rest of Open. Actually, one last quick question. I don't know if you're going to be here all 3 days or if you're only being here today. Awesome. This is your second hope?
Well, it's the second hope that I've spoken at.
Spoken at.
I've been coming since 2004.
Oh,
and okay. I've known about it since the very first one in 94.
That's me, yes. I used to read about it all the time. So quick question. As all stuff this year, what else are you excited about seeing, if there's one thing you can name?
Oh, God. Well, actually, Vi is about to do a talk, hardware hacking.
He's
on
a DEF CON 201 member, yes.
Yeah. That is, so I'm excited to see that in just a little bit.
I will quickly say for that, It is in the Richie room, which is on the lower level.
That's the one that's downstairs.
If I've watched him behind the scenes for that, because he works on some amazing project.
Yeah.
It, whatever you think it is more insane and complicated than that. I don't think people are going to be ready for this.
It's pretty cool. I'm excited.
So make him nervous. And once again, thank you for
coming on here.
And good luck with your endeavor on this matter. I'll be trying to fight for that.
Thank you so much. And for people who are here at Hope, I'm hard to miss. I'm the guy who looks like he lost his wig and then forgot what he was looking for. So just flag me down if you want to chat.
You just named 40 people.
All right.
I think you're the only one with an anonymous bandana on your arm. So
yeah,
I think
I'm wearing the camo blazer with the anonymous armband.
Yes.
Yeah. And it says Laufer on my jacket.
And I hope, funny enough, that's actually blending in. But yes, once again, thank you, and enjoy the rest of your con experience.
Thank you.
So we're going to be transitioning here to a different show, different guest here. Yeah, I know. I'm going to actually potentially do that. That's fine. Yeah, no, it's perfect. And would you like to step up to any of the mics?
My name is Keith. I gave a presentation today on the 68th.
So, could you repeat that again in the mic, sir?
Sure. So my name is Keith, and today I gave a presentation on Homebrew 68K.
Yes! You were like one of like four like hype talks, not including Chelsea Manning, that I kept hearing everyone could not stop talking about and waiting for and stuff. Congratulations for your talk.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Yeah, it's tough. A lot of presentations. Spent
so,
a lot of time working on it. Yeah.
When most people think about this, you know, they hear 68K, they think that's somehow like borking 1999 modems. But with my experience kind of in this is that this is pegboards. This is getting down to nitty-gritty detail. How would you describe what you do in this?
Well, here's the thing, right? In the 80s, the Motorola 68000 processor was pretty popular, right? Mm-hmm. Computers like the Commodore Amiga, like the Atari ST, like the Sega Genesis consoles.
What's the question, Mike?
And those type of consoles, those type of machines, the 68000 was pretty popular.
Yeah.
And so I grew up in that era, right? And so like in my teenage years.
I thought you were like 14 or something.
Yeah, something like that. That's right. That's right. And so I was pretty young and impressionable, of course. And so I spent time hacking on the 68000, learning some 68000 assembler. So I thought, hey, I want to advance my knowledge in terms of FPGAs and understanding electronics and design and how did all this stuff work. And how can I build something that I call my own, but using this old, familiar technology?
Yes. In fact, I believe there's a video game company called Nintendo that has a saying about that, which is using what they call old and withered technologies to do lateral thinking, a.k.a. new things.
Sure.
Yes. What are some of those possibilities that you found out and invented?
Well, so, I mean, essentially what I've done, right, is take 68000 soft core, which loaded that onto the FPGA.
Yeah.
That now enables me to not have to worry about all those connections, all those wires, all that stuff, so I can do stuff.
You tame the beast?
A little bit, in terms of, like, integration, in terms of bringing it together, where it's a little bit easier to manage. Now, trust me, I still have video displays and things like that where there are lots of pins. I have external memory, lots of pins to talk to that. So, but the idea there is to give you some type of learning platform on which you can sort of hack around and build on, right? It's really a learning project more than anything for both me and...
So it's like an Arduino before Arduino.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Arduino, and I made this point in my talk to a certain extent, right, is like the Arduino and some of these these other platforms are really neat, but I think they spoon feed people a little bit too much, right? So I like the complexities of something like that.
Yep, and we're going to be slowly joined by hopefully a couple other people, and... for a little bit, and aren't you supposed to be doing a giant supposed to be doing like a giant magnum opus speech soon?
Yeah.
Could you introduce yourself, sir, while we're here?
I'm Vi.
A little bit closer to the microphone.
I'm Vi Gray. I'm going to be doing the talk I Dream of Game Genies and Zip Files Hacking the NES, and hopefully it goes well. So far, I think out of everyone, he's probably seen me present, but Side Pocket seen me present, but I don't think really anyone else has.
Nope.
So,
and I've been, by the way, quickly hyping it as that I've seen your work It's very interesting how your thought process goes and the imagination you come up with. You're talking about how hacking microcontroller machines, yes, and coming up with crazy things. I tell people, it's like whatever you think Vi's talk is, it is way beyond that. Because I don't think, because from what I've seen, I don't think anyone even has like the slightest thing of like how nuts this gets.
I know some people recognized, back in February, I did an NES ROM that was also a zip file that contained its source code, and that was burned onto an NES cartridge, which is different from the proof of concept or GTFO article from issue 14. So, but it was inspired from that. But
So real quick before we kind of make a transition here, since we have the retro computing man of the hour here, is there any questions that you'd like to ask him about his subject?
I mean, I...
Or like cool comments or...
I'm bad at the questioning thing.
That's fine.
I just answer things. And then if I have questions, I just look it up online, figure out there's not enough documentation, and then just randomly throw things against the wall and figure out what sticks.
I like this guy. You sure do that with hardware, and that's basically everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good luck. You know, this is my first time presenting at HOPE, even though I've attended a bunch of them, so good luck to you. I'm sure you'll do good. You know, with all these type of things, when you know the material, there is absolutely no replacement for that. And so as long as you know what you're talking about, then it's easy.
Yeah. I was just recently working on some image stuff to kind of help explain it a tiny bit better, because I could understand what my presentation is about, but I also made it, so that's not really necessarily good enough. So very frantically finishing off my presentation today, and just technically finished everything about 5 minutes ago.
Okay, well, hey, good luck to you.
Yes. Okay. And we'll ask a quick question for you here. I know it's such a short interview because we're like kind of slamming a bunch of things together here.
Sure, no problem.
Again, so you said you've attended many HOPEs. What was the first one?
1994,
the OG.
Yeah, the first.
You got a dot because everyone ran out of badges. Yep. So that's my question is that you're here is the Circle of HOPE.
Yeah.
What is the thing that you're most excited about here? And the key is you can't say food or sleep.
You know, the number of talks that I've attended since I've been to all of the HOPEs is probably about 5 or 6. I come
That's
here,
pretty impressive, actually, compared to what most people attend here with talks.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't come for the talks. I come to socialize. I know a lot of the guys that are here. I've known them for literally 20 years or longer. And so I come to hang out and eat good food in New York. And if I happen to learn a couple things here or there, then even better.
Awesome. Well, I hope you enjoy the rest of your conference.
Hey, thank you.
Congratulations
too.
On your talk. And I just want to know if you have nothing to do at 11:30 tomorrow, you can hang out with us, talk, and possibly there might be booze.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate the offer.
Yes, have a joyous day.
Thanks.
So yeah, so I know that Vi has to run off in a bit, but I'm gonna actually attempt to do this here because even though I'm pretty sure that GI Jack either got lost again or passed out, and probably both, we're gonna see if I can actually intro this because if you look at the schedule, we're gonna talk a bit about an odd organization out in New Jersey of all places called DEFCON 201.
Yeah, Newark, New Jersey. Yeah. Yeah, I used to live in Brooklyn, working at a tech firm, but then I lost that cush job, thanks to the recession. Now I'm out the job and I can't pay rent here, I can't pay rent anywhere. They evict me everywhere, I thought I'd live in Harlem, maybe in LA City or way uptown on Broadway, till I saw that Craigslist, fit my budget, 100 per week, only catch for me though it was way out there in Jersey.